finally be on the way where Conoco will be able to advance a bridge over the Colville River to get to the other side is very welcome news.
A deal that could lead to oil and gas development in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Keegan Randall celebrates a first, a team World Cup medal after an exciting race.
Oh yeah. We did not look like we were in contention from the beginning.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
An agreement between two federal agencies today leaves only one formal step in the process to open the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, or NPRA, for development. The Army Corps of Engineers has refused to permit access to the area by way of a 4-mile-long gravel road and a bridge across the Colville River. The Corps' rejection was based on the Environmental Protection Agency's declaration of the Colville as an aquatic resource of national importance. Today's agreement between the EPA and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service declares the bridge as the preferred environmental alternative for access to the reserve. With their objection removed, final approval by the Corps is expected within a few weeks and will allow ConocoPhillips to begin work on the leases it now holds at the CD5 oil field just west of the Alpine Fields on the North Slope. Senator Lisa Murkowski is encouraged by the agreement, but recognizes it's not final.
For years, we have been talking about the potential available within the NPRA. But if operators can't access the area through roads or bridges, the promise of a lease or a permit means nothing. So to finally be on the way where Conoco will be able to advance a bridge over the Colville River to get to the other side is very welcome news.
ConocoPhillips spokeswoman Natalie Lohman sees the agreement between the agencies as a positive step in getting to work in the CD5 field, but she declines to say when work would get underway.
Because we haven't seen the permit nor its conditions, you know, we can't really say when we would start. But you know, receiving this permit is one of the key steps in order to receive, you know, the go-ahead to sanction the project. So, but again, because the actual permit hasn't been issued, we can't say when work will begin.
Murkowski says she, too, hopes conditions attached to the permit aren't burdensome. She says she spoke this morning with Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, who assured her the EPA is no longer objecting to the development.
The conditions are yet to be finally reviewed. We understand that they will be in the area that we had anticipated, which is requirement for using the same crossing rather than additional crossings in the river, some engineering changes. But we are very, very hopeful that there will be no surprises with these conditions once we learn of the exact nature of them.
Republican Congressman Don Young said he welcomed hearing of the agreement, but added, quote, it should have happened sooner. And Senator Mark Begich praised ConocoPhillips and the Interior Department for continuing to work toward the agreement. He said Alaska's oil and gas industry needs to hear some good news on the development front. A failed marine delivery of 1.6 million gallons of fuel due to last month's storm spurred the leadership at the Sitnasauk Native Corporation in Nome to get creative. They're looking to Russian and Korean companies to keep fuel costs down in the Western Alaskan community. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
Sitnasauk and a Russian shipping company may very well make history this month. Sitnasauk Native Corporation has signed a contract with Vitus Marine to deliver 1.5 million gallons of fuel to Nome via marine tanker. The delivery in the double-hulled ice-classed Russian tanker is scheduled for late December and will replace the 1.6 million gallons that was not delivered by Delta Western due to the fall storm. If the newly planned delivery is successful, Sitnasauk Board Chairman Jason Evans says the voyage will mark the first time a marine fuel delivery is made to a Western Alaska community in the winter months.
Certainly we would have rather to just get our fall delivery and not have to break new ground in winter deliveries of fuel. But once we were notified this barge wasn't coming, we assembled a team and just started going through every scenario and network of people that we can contact to figure out what options were available.
Evan says overall, while untraditional, the ice-breaking option is significantly lower in costs than flying fuel to Nome. He says there are too many variables at this point for a specific number that consumers will eventually pay. The Russian vessel, the Renda, is currently in Vladivostok, Russia, and will be inspected by the Coast Guard on Wednesday. The Jones Act states that a foreign vessel cannot carry cargo from the U.S. to the U.S., so the fuel will be purchased in Incheon, Korea. Evan says there will be added costs from this mode of delivery.
And it's unclear who will absorb those costs, if Delta Western will pick up a fair share of those, and that the consumer, you know, doesn't have to.
When it comes to Delta Western, the company that did not deliver the original fuel purchase, Vice President Kirk Payne says he's not sure what fair share means.
It surprises me a little bit. But, I mean, we're happy to continue to work with those guys in a manner that makes the most sense to everybody.
Payne says there are no lawyers involved and nothing has been filed. He says a dialogue continues between the two companies.
I mean, we're here, we're open, we'll discuss it. It is a private matter. We'll keep it private.
The double-hulled ice-class Russian tanker, the Renda, is certified to travel through 4 feet of ice and recently traveled through 5 feet of ice while delivering fuel to the Russian Far East. It's unclear whether the Renda will dock at the inner or outer harbor once it arrives in Nome. The tanker has 2 kilometers of hose that could be put over the ice to the fuel depot. The U.S. Coast Guard is currently getting approval for the U.S.'s only icebreaker, the Healy, to remain in the area until the delivery is made. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
Investigators will try to determine the cause of an explosion and fire that injured several people at a convenience store and gas station in Cantwell yesterday. Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ipsen says the evening fire, which destroyed the building, started with a large explosion.
But as far as what caused the explosion, that is still to be determined. We have 2 deputy state fire marshals to start the investigation.
Ipsen says the blast and flames injured 5 people, including 2 store employees.
The degree of injuries range from serious burns to contusions and injuries suffered from flying debris.
Ipsen says the injured were transported to hospitals in Fairbanks and Anchorage. Firefighters and other emergency personnel came from the Cantwell, Tri-Valley, and Trapper Creek departments. State troopers, the National Park Service, and the State Department of Transportation also aided in the response. Bad weather and icy roads slowed their arrival. Flames were kept from spreading to outside fuel pumps and tanks, but Ipsen says some vehicles were burned. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the long and expensive process of moving the village of Newtok.
I love my village and I hate to leave it, but then I have no choice.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266. And by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety. operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees.
Storms have knocked out power in a few northern communities. 22 homes are without power in Nuiqsut and 16 in Atkasuk. Emergency responders have opened a shelter in Atkasuk. Jeremy Zedek is a communications officer with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He says responders in Nuiqsut are working to keep water pipes from freezing.
They are taking a temporary generator around, and they are re-energizing homes for a certain period to keep them warmed up and trying to prevent any type of damage to the homes. And they have the resources. They haven't made any emergency requests to us. They have the resources to repair the lines and get power back on. They just need a break in the weather to get those linemen in.
Temperatures in the two North Slope villages are expected to drop into the double digits below zero tonight. The survivor of a 2010 Coast Guard helicopter crash has his first day in court this week. Lieutenant Lance Leone is expected to appear Wednesday before a military judge in Juneau. The Coast Guard has brought charges against Leone for the loss of a Coast Guard helicopter in July 2010 and the deaths of two of its crew members. The chopper and its crew were based in Sitka, where community members who support Leone have taken up a collection for his defense fund. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Lieutenant Lance Leone is facing three charges from the Coast Guard. One says he failed to navigate away from charted hazards. Another charges him with the destruction of the chopper. Those are both misdemeanors. The third charge consists of two felony counts. It says Leone negligently caused the deaths of Petty Officer First Class Adam Hoke and Petty Officer Second Class Brett Banks. Leone is not facing charges in connection with the death of the helicopter's commander, Lieutenant Sean Kruger. Wednesday's proceeding is called an Article 32 hearing. It's similar to a grand jury hearing in civilian court, but with a few differences.
Unlike a civilian grand jury, the Article 32 is an adversary hearing. The accused can be there not only can be there, but he can be there and be represented by counsel.
Lieutenant Colonel John Farr is retired from the Army's Judge Advocate General Corps and is now an attorney in private practice in Anchorage. He says in addition to Leone's ability to be present, the hearing will include a full airing of the evidence against him.
It's a tactical decision like any other whether the accused would actually testify. But the military system has all the protections of the civilian system. In fact, it resembles it in more ways than it differs from it.
Instead of a panel of grand jurors, Leone's case will be heard before an investigating officer, in this case, Captain Andrew Norris, a Coast Guard judge advocate stationed at the U.S. Naval War College in Rhode Island. Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow is a spokesman for the U.S. Coast Guard in Alaska.
Once the evidence has been presented, he will then write his recommendation and provide that to Admiral Ostabo. And Admiral Ostabo will then determine the next course of action to take.
Wadlow is referring to Rear Admiral Thomas Ostabo, commander of the Coast Guard District that encompasses all of Alaska. Ostabo can decide to drop the charges, handle the matter internally, or send the case on to a court-martial, which would put Leone on trial. While all of this is happening, friends in Sitka have established a legal defense fund for Leone through the law office of Pearson & Hansen. Mike Finn is one of those friends. The charges were filed on September 30th, and Finn says the time since then has been frustrating.
It's hard to get answers right now. There's not a lot of people that want to talk about it that can talk about it. There's a lot of people that want to help that can't. And so it's just one of those things that I feel a personal interest in wanting to get the word out and get the proper word out and tell people, you know, some of the things that are going on with this case that aren't being aired.
Finn says he has many concerns, including a feeling that Leone is being singled out for punishment by a command that's concerned about its safety image. And he says the charges against Leone have changed his view of the Coast Guard as an institution. His 11-year-old son has shown an interest in joining, but Finn says he won't support the decision if Leone is convicted. That's a different reaction than the one held by Leone's father, George.
I still love them. I love their mission. It is upsetting to know what's happening at present. But I believe he will be rescued and vindicated because my son didn't do anything wrong.
George Leone says his son was questioned in the aftermath of the accident and that the investigation appeared to be over. He says Lance Leone was about to get the green light to fly again.
He got a call from in Washington that his training's been canceled.
The charges were filed not long after. George Leone says he's been awed by the support the community of Sitka showed in the aftermath of the crash and the support from the Coast Guard. That included a hospital visit from Admiral Robert Papp, the Coast Guard commandant. Papp is the highest-ranking officer in the Coast Guard, and when the charges were filed, George Leone called him at home. He says he didn't get to talk to Papp, but he spoke to his wife.
So what did I want to tell Papp when I called him? I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for all the love and support, but I want to understand what's going on, and please stop. How can they do a tremendous investigation? They spent thousands of man hours, put together a report, and they said, Lance didn't do anything wrong. They hit some wires out there, whatever. And now to come up with this, when he got the green light to go flying, you're slapping the face of all the people that did this investigative report. They said there's nothing wrong with it. Now, where is this coming from?
George Leone might not have received an answer to that question, where is this coming from? But after Wednesday's hearing, he and his son, Lieutenant Lance Leone, might have a clearer idea of where it's going. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A Canadian company says a gold prospect in southwest Alaska is ready to advance to permitting. NovaGold Resources Incorporated says its updated feasibility study for the Donlin Creek mine shows a reduction in previously anticipated capital costs and underscores the benefit of using natural gas instead of diesel for power generation. Pending board approval, the permitting process could be initiated early next year. Concerns about gravel mining in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough are getting a fresh look by borough authorities. The debate over gravel mining's effects on the area has gone on for some years, prompted by fears that digging too deep may harm the water table. The Matsu Borough Assembly plans to discuss an ordinance regulating gravel mining at its meeting this week. The ordinance would establish reclamation standards while creating a permitting process for mining operations that dig into the water table. Alex Strawn is a permitting services manager for the Borough Planning Department.
It would require reclamation standards for new pits within the borough, and for new operations that would be mining within the water table, there would be a permit process and certain protections that go along with that. Currently, mining in the water table is prohibited within the borough.
The gravel issue came before the assembly in 2008 when the borough put a moratorium on new mines digging into the water table. Gravel pit owners say the ordinance is not necessary and hurts their business. Strawn said the new ordinance also requires gravel miners to gather data and get insurance before they can get a permit.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by Providence Health and Services Alaska and North Rim Bank.
Recent high winds and unseasonable warmth in south-central Alaska have created prime avalanche conditions. The Chugach National Forest's Avalanche Information Center's Wendy Wagner is warning of considerable danger for all upper elevation slopes at Turnagain Pass.
Avalanche danger is considerable. Strong winds, rain, and snow over the weekend rapidly loaded slopes and initiated a natural avalanche cycle, and human-triggered avalanches are likely today.
Rain on snow and wind over the past weekend created the considerable danger. Wagner says in a taped advisory this morning that the danger will likely continue through Tuesday. Anchorage Nordic skier Keegan Randall took home two World Cup medals in the skate sprint events this past weekend in Dusseldorf, Germany. She won the individual event on Saturday and got second in the team event on Sunday. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
This was the third weekend of World Cup racing, but the first chance for Randall to race her best event, the skate sprint. She says the course was short and fast with narrow corridors that made it technically challenging.
I was able to make some good moves over the second half of the course and come on really strong in the finish in both the individual sprint and the team sprint. So I'm just incredibly happy with the way I'm feeling right now, and fun to get a couple more World Cup medals.
Saturday's win was the fourth career World Cup victory for Randall, but she and Alaska Pacific University teammate Sadie Bjornsson made history with their silver medal. No U.S. team has ever placed in a Nordic World Cup relay event. Randall says there were some exciting moments out on the course.
Oh, yeah. We did not look like we were in contention from the beginning. Sadie had a great start, but then got caught up behind a team that fell down. So right away at the beginning of the final, we were kind of at the back of the pack and had to work our way back up into contention. But even as we tagged off onto the final leg, we were in ninth position. And so I had to kind of sneak up through the crowd. And so it's very narrow out there, and but I was able to sneak through. And luckily, I had a lot of gas left at the end, so made a pass on the home stretch. But there were definitely some close calls. I saw a French girl do a flip right in front of me.
Randall says in past years, she hasn't even had a teammate to race with in the relay. But last weekend, the U.S. had two strong teams in the event. She says she knew the U.S. women had potential to do well.
American skiers, and particularly women and female skiers now, can see what's possible. And I mean, a few years ago, we would have been ecstatic to get one result in the top 30. And now, you know, we're consistently placing several of our skiers there. And you just see this swell of momentum. And I think it's just, it's really great. It's what we've been working towards for decades now. So it's cool to see it come to fruition.
Randall has World Cup skate sprint events coming up the next two weekends in Switzerland and Slovenia. She says she's excited to keep the momentum going. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
In 2006, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers predicted that in 10 to 15 years, the village of Newtok would be lost to erosion. Villagers were concerned about erosion as early as the 1980s and started the process of relocating, despite a projected cost of $80 to $125 million. The work of village residents and a couple of dozen federal, state, and regional agencies is starting to pay off as Newtok prepares to move people to the new site. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
The village of Newtok has experienced two major floods in the past 10 years. The barge landing used for delivery of fuel and supplies was wiped out. Silt makes the river hard to navigate. The Ninglik River is eroding at the rate of 50 to 100 feet per year. Some structures are 1 to 200 feet from the river. Infrastructure in Newtok includes a school, airport, post office, health clinic, water lines, boardwalks, and electric lines, as well as a store, church, and homes. Sally Russell Cox is a planner with Community and Regional Affairs in the State Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. She says Shishmaref and Kivalina in northwest Alaska and Newtok in southwest Alaska are losing ground for several reasons.
With the lack of shore fast sea ice, these communities don't have the natural protection that they used to have during coastal storms. And so storm surges and waves, et cetera, impact their coastlines much more quickly. And then there's also, you know, permafrost thawing that's taking place as well. So the process is definitely sped up. But it's not, it has been going on for quite some time. So it's a combination of factors.
Through lobbying and negotiations, the Newtok Village Corporation was able to swap land with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for a new village site located 9 miles south of Newtok on Nelson Island. It's called Mugtarvik, which means getting water from the spring in Yupik. The list of agencies involved in a planning committee for the relocation includes two dozen federal, state, and regional agencies and nonprofit organizations. Russell Cox says it's a challenge to keep everything running smoothly.
There is nobody that's coordinating the overall effort except for Newtalk itself. And that's why we're going through this strategic management planning effort so that the community will have a clear blueprint with, you know, some sequencing in there about what needs to happen when and what agencies could potentially be the ones that would provide funding for that effort.
The strategic plan will add to the community layout plan, emergency response plans, and geotechnical and other studies already done. Planning is also underway for a sanitation system, energy, housing, quarry development, a fishery support facility, and an airport. Construction of a road and barge landing at the new village site has been the biggest accomplishment so far. The Federal Economic Development Administration and Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities pitched in $1 million. Newtalk Tribal Administrator Stanley Tom says the military supplied labor as part of its Innovative Readiness Training, or IRT.
They've been helping us building the barge landing, the roads to the rock quarry. You know, we're lacking funding, and that's why we are asking the IRT to build us a road. Those are very important for the community to start the community, the barge landing, roads in the community, and the main road to the emergency evacuation center.
The military is also building an emergency evacuation center, which is due for completion this summer. Tom says with funding from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, he's had 3 houses built and is starting work on another 3.
My plan is to finish these houses and start doing a pioneering. And pioneering means living without any water, sewer, no facilities, just live in the old ways. And these houses have wood stoves in them. So these super insulated housing should be really warm for these new village members that will, you know, stay at the Mahtavik site.
So you're thinking some people might be living there next year?
Well, yes, that's the plan, yeah.
Tom says he remembers elders talking about relocating when he was a child. Even so, he says the work involved and the move itself are challenging.
I love my village, you know, I hate to leave it, but then I have no choice, you know, because it's a permafrost. And Nelson Island is solid ground. And many times I nearly gave up, but then I said to myself, if I quit, everything will stop. And that's why I am motivated. And my father-in-law proposed the Mahtavik site, and he's our elder. So my elders motivate me to work on the new village site.
The villages of Kivalina and Shishmaref are also at risk due to erosion. Shishmaref is selecting a relocation site. Kivalina is working to get an evacuation shelter built. In Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lorelei Kinnean in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jocelyn Estes and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Ed Ronco in Sitka. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates 4 decades of dependable financing and competitive interest rates for Alaskans. Find out more by asking your lender or real estate professional how Alaska Housing can assist you with buying a home. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.